My aunt's little ones are doing a 9-week course. And I mean, I know they're really olic and stuff, but I just think it's kind of cruel. Because when she says sit, they sit. When she says come, they come. And now, she's teaching them tricks, like party tricks and stuff. I mean, it's exploitation. Come on, I mean, the poor dogs.
A combination meal, inspired by 7 colors, there's something for everyone. Nando's, fire it up.
This is CliffCentral.com.
Sunel musician and something Soweto who everybody's talking about at the moment, and Kanamali. Happy Thursday morning. All right, well, you know, usually on a Thursday we get into some hardcore news, but of course over the holidays nothing happened. It wasn't like the ANC had an NEC meeting yesterday. It wasn't like they had an elective conference yesterday. It wasn't like the president established any commissions or anything in the last few days.
I must admit, it's been very quiet.
Yeah, there's no court cases really. I mean, I don't even know what we're going to talk about this morning.
It's a non-event.
Yeah, should we move on?
Yeah, let's do it.
All right, let's get Sia to tell us more about Meghan Markle and Prince Harry.
Because that is what is the most important thing right now in the country.
No, luckily for us, Deshni Subramani's here, and she is with the Mail and Guardian content producing there. And
I used to be.
You used to be. What are you up to at the moment?
I'm freelancing at the moment. I'm actually producing for The Big Debate right now.
I like freelancing.
Yeah.
You're in charge of your own destiny.
Yeah.
When did you stop with the Mail and Guardian? I didn't know that.
Maybe about 4 years ago.
God, that's old news then.
I've moved on to a lot of places. I've been at Business Day, Financial Mail.
I'm sorry, I'm so out of date.
It's okay. It's okay. I mean, my last event was not so eventful. I was at Huffington Post, news editor.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Well, you know, best leave that in the background.
On.
Yeah.
I mean, that's
Is that even a is that a news publication, or is that what Donald Trump would call fake news?
Well, he would call it fake news and a whole lot more.
So Deshni, with The Big Debate, I mean, that's a hell of a fun show to produce because there's often lots of fire and brimstone in that show, right?
It's a great show to produce. It's really interesting just to see people, how much they love you when you want them on the show. And then afterwards, you know, they just disappear on you. I'm sure you've experienced that a lot. You know, they just like, poof.
You message them or you phone them and then they don't want to answer.
The WhatsApp doesn't even get delivered. What? Who are you again? Sorry, I don't know.
Oh, that's funny.
Yeah, but no, I mean, it's interesting. It's been great so far. I don't know if you've watched any of the shows. We've done 2 last year and we're continuing this year. The next one's on the 17th of Feb.
Okay, have you got it all sorted out? Is it recorded already?
No, we're doing it live. It's live.
What's it going to be?
I can't tell you yet.
Tell us about the 2 that you put on in December.
We did State Capture and we did Radical Economic Transformation. So we basically did it ahead of the ANC conference, that non-event that you were talking about.
Yes.
And it was basically to look at these 2 big themes that were coming out of, you know, the ANC presidential race. It was great. Look, it was lit. I won't lie. The first one was a bit hectic, but the second one was a little bit even-tempered, and I think it was a lot more theory to deal with, so it actually worked out quite well.
Isn't it difficult when you're producing a TV show to not fall into the trap of trying to do sensational, I'm going to shout at you, you're going to shout at me TV, when you actually, especially with a show like that, have an opportunity to educate people and to hear both sides of the story and to give maybe a lot of South Africans who wouldn't be able to hear an articulate debate about this a chance to hear some very valid viewpoints from both sides. And sometimes there are 3 or 4 sides to a story. But it is tempting to want to make people fight, right?
That's the best part about it, is that we keep, every time we have editorial meetings, we have to keep going back, guys, but are we going to have a debate or are we going to have a fight? Is it going to be a conversation or is it going to be a debate? So that you also run the risk of having people disagree with each other, which we don't want. We want people to actually pull out the different sides and just get into the, you know, nitty-gritty of it. But, I mean, it just goes back to the name, so we just focus on that and we try to keep it moving.
Sure. All right, well, we wanted to talk to you and get you in here this morning for the Burning Platform, because you have been covering news stories for some time, and I thought that over the period of this last couple of months, I was being very sarcastic about nothing's happened, but actually a huge amount has happened.
Yep.
And they always try to sneak in something that should take up front page news and be everyone's most pressing thought for that week. But they do it in a week where most people are either drunk or tired or at home
just
or not.
Just asleep.
Or even. Sleeping or not even paying attention to the news, right?
There's a running joke in journalism circles that if the president's out the country, be on standby, because he always makes massive announcements when he's not in the country. Right. I don't know if anyone's noticed.
Yeah.
He goes to like France and then he announces, okay, cabinet reshuffle happening. Something,
so
you
he
know,
doesn't
like
have to deal with the fallout at home, right?
Yeah, and I think, yeah, it's a lot to do with, personally, I just think it shows that he may feel a little bit isolated in some of the decisions he makes. I mean, I don't know.
Well, recently you would be right to think that. It seems like everybody's considering him yesterday's news.
Mm.
And now he's this lame duck president who's sitting there with nothing to do. Not that he's been doing a lot of presidenting, to be fair.
The honest truth is that President Zuma is not a lame duck president. He has extreme power, and this is the problem right now. I don't know if you've been listening to other people explain about the two centers of power within the ANC and the state. So we've got an ANC president who is Cyril Ramaphosa, who is the main head of the leading party, and we've got a president who is not the head of the leading party. And the last time this happened, what happened? 2009, Polokwane. There was a recall of Thabo Mbeki. So there's a lot of speculation about the fact that this is going to happen, and I think, you know, the ANC, NEC, I don't know if you read some news stories yesterday, but News24 reported that four sources within the NEC, the highest body of the ANC, has said that, you know, Zuma's time is up. It's a matter of when now.
But then Ace Magashule yesterday, I saw him in the news saying, no, there are no two centers. There's only one center of power. That center of power is the ANC. And don't panic. This is all media speculation. It's people like you, Deshni, spreading around rumors.
But what does that mean? It's only the ANC. So does that mean that Ramaphosa is then the center of power?
Listen,
what does he mean?
I mean, first and foremost, when Ace opens his mouth, you need to put on a whole lot of filters because you know mostly lies are going to tumble out. But let's give him benefit of the doubt for a moment, just if it needs some exploration. He is the new Secretary General. He doesn't want to start, we would assume, on lies. And maybe he's trying to figure out what that center, if he believes there's only one, maybe take him at his word. In that case, is it Cyril or is it Getlitlikiza in the union buildings?
I mean, so the Secretary General is one of the most powerful people in the ANC. And he is obviously towing the same line that everyone else is. The ANC is united. Hmm. We have unity to bring forth, and we will all be united again.
Sure, that's what we saw in the elective conference.
Exactly.
So much unification.
I mean, there's also the fact that you can't pretend that everyone agrees. You know, I don't understand why we have to keep pushing this agenda of unity when everyone, so clearly, even within sitting in this room right now, we all disagree. There's no reason to do that. But so, it's once again, a whole lot of hogwash. I mean, this is just PR. The ANC is the center of power. Mm-hmm. The Ramaphosa is the leader of the ANC. So if he wants us to understand it that way, for me, I think that he's saying that Ramaphosa is going to be the decision maker. And look, a lot of the signs are pointing to that. He's going to have to really step up.
So do you think it's just a matter of time for the president to be recalled and for Cyril, who's in any case deputy president of the country, to just assume the presidency?
So it also depends on how it's done. I don't know if you've been noticing that there's calls for impeachment of the president as well, which is a hectic thing. There's three ways for a president to leave the country, right? You can either resign, which is nice, and he steps down and he moves along.
Not going to happen with this president.
I don't think so, and a lot of people are hoping it will, but look, I don't want to jump to conclusions. This man can surprise me every day.
every day. And he's got a lot of irons and other fires outside of being president that he can't afford to have reignited. I mean, there are things about these pending court cases that might come into effect if he's no longer serving in government.
Exactly.
So he's very careful to make these decisions based on his own personal well-being rather than that of the country.
Exactly. Look, the presidency really affords you a very good shroud of protection away from everything else. So that's the one way. The other way is that he basically gets a no confidence vote. How many have we had in the last few years? Yeah, so I don't even know if that's going to work. But with a no confidence vote, it's not as serious as an impeachment. With a no confidence, it's basically people in Parliament vote, or the National Assembly, they vote and they say, look, you've been great so far, but we don't think you can continue. Please, can you leave? And we've all voted. 2/3 of us say you need to go. If that happens, what happens then is that the president can then take his benefits as the president and move on. I don't know if anyone knows, but the president for as long as you've been president, even Motlanthe keeps all the benefits.
F. W. de Klerk still has.
Still has,
right?
It. I mean, he's living the best life. I wish it was him. Kgalema
and even people who've only served for a short while, like Baleg Ambete, also has those privileges. So
what are those privileges?
You get bodyguards, you get government transport, you get government housing. You get the same salary you had as president for the rest
all
of your life.
Do you know what the best part is?
What?
Who's paying for it?
Oh, we are. Up until this moment.
That's the best
part.
That's
even more delightful.
Yep, that's true. So, you know, there's that option, which also, once again, won't work out because I don't think it will work out. I can't state it as fact. But it hasn't worked before. Mm-hmm. So the last one is impeaching him. And this is a serious one. So if you impeach a president, it basically means that he has flouted the Constitution so badly that he cannot sit anymore.
Which the Constitutional Court has already said he has.
Right.
So
and if you flout the Constitution, there is enough space for you to actually be seen as someone who needs to answer for a criminal activity. That's what flouting the Constitution means. So impeachment then means that he doesn't get anything. No benefits, no security, no nothing. And if you understand Zuma, like we understand Zuma, he's out for number one only. Mm. And which do you think is he going to go for? No confidence or impeachment at this stage.
So isn't he trying to bargain at this point?
Yeah.
Isn't he trying to get a good deal for himself? Because at this point, South Africans are so gutful of him that we would come to the table for a deal. And he probably knows that.
Yeah, I'm sure he does know that. And I think, yesterday there were reports that Cyril Ramaphosa and him were in close conversations. Nobody really knows what it's about. The NEC has said that, look, it is a matter of time, but we're not right now. We'll deal with this in our own time. But obviously yesterday's NEC was not the time for Zuma to be recalled because the NEC happened and nothing happened. He was not recalled. And if these conversations continue, it's very clear that Ramaphosa is the person with the, you know, winning hand. Mm. If that happens, though, we have to remember that Ramaphosa has a very small window of opportunity to do this properly. He's been given a lot of a leg up and confidence from markets, from the populace, you know, because he is the leading ideology in the country right now for people in power. So they've been giving him space to make decisions, but he has a very short time to do that in. And if he screws this up, I don't really know what's going to happen to his support base and how it's going to work out.
Well, he will start to decline in influence and power, and then someone else will have to fill that vacuum.
Someone else will have to fill that
vacuum. And we know that the incumbent president of the country is not bad at filling those vacuums, not only with himself, but also with his people.
Well, that's the other thing. Ramaphosa was in KZN earlier this week because he was just trying to basically, you know, calm people down to let them know, you know, we're still here, we're united, we're still the same
entity. And schmoozing the king.
Schmoozing the king. And this is literally about there was no KZN candidate who made it to the top six. And also, if this has to happen to Zuma, that's his major support base. So he needs to be able to gain their confidence and gain a feel that, look, we're doing this because this is what's best for the country.
Mm.
So who has within the ANC, because we know that there were a lot of people who were talking big game before the elective conference, among them Fikile Mbalula, who was saying, oh, it's Nkosazana Dlamini Zuma, and she's going to be the first woman, and I'm so excited about this. You know, all that kind of, I'm backing my candidate stuff. And then he very quickly went quiet, and now he almost seems to be, he's wearing Cyril Ramaphosa's shirts, he's making a lot of noise for Cyril. He's turned his tail and changed direction very quickly. Who else has done that?
Pretty much everyone in the ANC. Remember in the very good voice of Baleka Mbete, unity, unity, you know, that's literally what it's about. At the end of the day, you don't have an option. If your horse doesn't win, you have to move on. And you're the Minister of Police, Fikile Mbalula. You want to stay in power. You need to make sure you toe the line. Otherwise, you're out. Because once Cyril becomes president of the country, which it probably will happen, you're out if you're not towing the line. He has, and I don't think Ramaphosa is going to risk his name for the sake of a few people who want to bring it down. He has too much to prove as a person. You know, President Cupcake has a lot to do.
President Cupcake.
I mean, I want to put that out there because we keep forgetting that this person was lying.
Yeah.
You know, we pretend that the only thing that matters is the fact that he is a market pleaser, but that's not the only point. The fact is that this man was having an affair with somebody else. He hurt other women, and there's a problem here. If we only see corruption as one side of it, mm-hmm. which is only money. And let's be honest here, Zuma has done more than one thing here. He has not only done money problems, he's also, you know, being accused of rape, which he was acquitted of. I have to say that.
Yeah, you have to add that.
I have to say that.
But we can, I mean, there's a track record of the way he feels about women and the way he treats women and what he thinks of women.
There's also accusations of, you know, Ramaphosa having beaten his wife. I don't know if that's true. We don't, I mean, there's no way for me to prove that. But there's a lot of things here at stake, and we have to remember that corruption doesn't just start with money. It's not about money changing its hands. It starts with lies. It starts with, you know, a whole lot of bull that comes with it.
So the president also instituted the Commission of Inquiry into State Capture this week, which was something Thuli Madonsela told him to do like 3 years ago.
Right.
And then he fired her, and, well, she was removed from office, and then eventually Busisiwe Mgwebane came in, and Busisiwe Mgwebane did not make a move in this direction at all. He's now suddenly decided it's time, and he's even appointed the Deputy Chief Justice to head the commission.
So, it's interesting, because remember he's got an appeal in the courts right now over that document from Thuli Madonsela, where he says, we don't want these recommendations. I need someone to review this. And there's been a lot of back and forth about whether in institution the inquiry and him having this appeal, did he flout the constitution? There's a lot of back and forth and lots of different perspectives on it. And look, Pieter de Vos says that, look, there's different ways to look at it. He can say, yes, he did flout the constitution, but also at the same time, he has too much power to be able to decide these things. So because it's been decided, i.e. who will head it up, how it's going to work, happen much later, it may be seen as a little bit more, there's a little bit more space for him to be able to do this. The inquiry, we also have to take with the sincerity it's given to us with. I mean, if you look at any other commission, Marikana Commission, does anyone remember any of the outcomes and any of the things that happened out of there?
No.
Right. So the biggest commission that we might remember some outcomes of is the TRC. Right. After that, I mean, life is many still continuing. These things are long, they're drawn
out. And they're very boring. It's a lot of detail.
It's lots of legalese, you know. It's things that we don't really have the time and power to be able to understand with our busy lives. So this is also going to take a long time, A, and B, the effectiveness of it is really the most important thing for me. Is this really going to do much? And I think with the kind of pressure that's been put on this topic particularly, we might see something a little bit different than what happened, for instance, at Marikana.
Well, there's a lot riding on it, not just the president and those implicated in State Capture's future, but the future of this country in terms of us being a rule of law democracy.
I mean, also at the end of the day, how long is this going to take? Is this really going to affect the fact that he's being recalled, impeached, or no confidence or anything? First, Parliament has to set the rules for how a president can be impeached. That hasn't even been done yet. So the beginning stages, first they need to go back to every instance in which a president can be deemed to have flouted the constitution. And one of the things that other political parties have been saying, especially the DA, is that we need to draft these rules not for a particular president, but for all presidents. So should this happen again, there's ease with which and a fast pace with which this can happen.
Yeah, because we need to have a better system for getting rid of someone who's incompetent. Right. That's what we've learned from Jacob Zuma. This constitution was written for Thabo Mbeki and Nelson Mandela and those kind of reasonable people. Mm. It wasn't written for a kleptocratic, beholden State Capture agent.
Well, that's assuming any of them were any more rational than he is.
Well, I think the record will show, but I mean, historically, I don't think President Jacob Zuma is going to be compared favorably with those two.
I doubt it.
Okay, let's just talk for a second about something nobody cares about anymore because we have a short attention span and we all forget very quickly. Where is poor NDZ? And what is she doing? Do you know?
Well, she's part of the NEC, so...
Yeah, but does she have... Because she quit the AU job to do this. It was going to be a big thing. I mean, what has she been doing?
So the NEC basically is part of the decision-making body of the NEC.
So she was there yesterday.
She was there yesterday, and at the moment...
At the back, you're like helping yourself to some porridge. I mean, like, what was going on there? What a sad ending to her political ambition.
It really is a sad ending, because she...
Like when Hillary Clinton was spotted in the woods. After the 2016.
Oh. I mean, the thing is, that this always happens to women. And this is, and I'm sorry, I have to be honest.
To men, you know, whoever heard of Michael Dukakis after he lost in the
1980s? I mean, but how big? Well, there we go. 19 what again?
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
What happened to who mentions Mitt Romney anymore?
I mean, we still know kind of what he's doing a little bit.
Come on.
But I mean, the thing is, what's sad about it is that these are two women, or well, particularly NDZ, who has a lot to offer. I mean, she really has a lot to offer. She transformed Home Affairs when she was the minister of it.
Didn't her director general do most of that?
But under her command. And
and I know that women don't get the credit that they deserve when they do things, and men always get the credit and women get the blame. I know that. We have a bias in society. But Home Affairs, it did start to come right under her. She, when she was Minister of Health, apart from Sarafina, she did change tobacco legislation. A lot of people very happy about that, and maybe we've reaped a lot of rewards from that too. But in that period at the AU, she got so little done. There was huge frustration around her. There was more division between Francophone and Anglophone Africa than there's almost ever been. And there was just such jockeying for power that it made it very difficult for her to say, this is my track record.
Mm.
I think that might have been one of the problems with her ambitions for being president of this country. She didn't have a lot to show for her time at the AU.
I mean, that's the thing. If you don't have solid track record like Cyril Ramaphosa, is that exactly like you're saying, then you don't have much. The problem is that it also depends on your personality. So NDZ is a different kind of personality who does things differently, who sees the world differently. Ramaphosa is also very different, more ostentatious, much more in your face. And, you know, we could really pretend that that's a gender thing, but, I mean, it could be either. It's neither here nor there. But her as a leader, she has a lot of chops and things to offer, and I think this is, in the NEC, might be where we could see it. And if you're more of an insider, more than I am at the moment, you might be able to see those different parts of her. But obviously now the ANC has a lot to worry about, and I think they're going to need all the hands they have to make the right decisions and at the right time. The most important thing now for the ANC is timing. They cannot even think about what's going to happen to any other person within the ANC until this pending issue.
The person at the top determines how everything looks under them, right?
Basically. And so we have to really wait for Ramaphosa. Everything is hinging on Ramaphosa at this point. He has to do something, or, you know, it's really going to be bad for the ANC. They're going to lose even more than they've lost before.
Hmm. All right. What's going to happen to most of these ministers if let's say, Jacob Zuma is recalled and Cyril does become the president? Mm. And in that role, he's then reshuffling perhaps a few of the posts, which he likely will do, because he has, as you say, this window of opportunity to act. And if he doesn't use it, he doesn't spend that political capital, it goes. Do you think there are certain people whose heads are on the chopping block immediately?
Okay, so with an impeachment, Ramaphosa does not automatically become the president. The Speaker of Parliament then becomes the president. So the National Assembly will then rule, they will vote, and you know, you need a 2/3 majority on whether this will happen. Once it happens, the Speaker gets into power. They then need to decide who's going to be president after that, who should, you know, ultimately be Ramaphosa. Again, they will have to vote on that. Mm-hmm. If there's no vote outcome, like not enough of a majority, they will then have to wait 30 days to get a secret ballot. They have 30 days to do this. They have to do a secret ballot if there's more than two candidates, and then they vote on them. Within 30 days, if that's not done, the whole cabinet is dissolved. That's all the ministers are gone. Hmm. And we have to do a whole new election with the public.
Wow, that is so much admin.
Admin. We're like on the precipice. We're basically, you know.
We can handle a little bit of admin.
Yeah, right, admin we can deal with. I think
admin. Like, I do not want to go and vote.
I am not going to register and do my thumb. No, that's the last thing we need to worry about. I mean, look, we've seen how the markets can really determine what we do by just the president sneezing. So if we decide that within 30 days we don't know what the... Can I swear?
You can.
Oh, great. Oh, my God. You should have told me this earlier. If we don't know what the fuck is going on...
You should have been, like, letting loose from the get-go.
Yeah, if we don't know what's going on, then we basically are fucked. And, you know, we've got those 30 days. And we are then going to become the news that you see. You know, everyday news of other countries where they're just like, oh my God, there's no president. What the fuck is going on? Nobody knows where to turn. That's basically what's going to happen. So we actually, this is a very serious time. And I don't think that people appreciate just how complicated it is to impeach a president. It's not as easy as just, okay, once you're out, Ramaphosa's in, let's keep it moving. It seems that way because we seem to understand, or we think we know who's going to, like, get in there. But if anything, the ANC race has taught us that actually this country is not simple.
And this happened in Brazil.
This happened in Brazil.
Right. So there's a template there to see what can evolve after this. I mean, it's huge political instability in the short term, but in the long term, it allows people to really be very particular about what sort of government they want after that.
Mm-hmm. Which is a good thing.
Yeah, I'm curious also about who the big winners will be in a Cyril dispensation. Like, who are the people who are going to suddenly come out of the shadows and who've been supporting him all along? We know about the obvious members of the top six and those kinds of positions, but we don't know who
in government.
We don't know who Cyril would appoint to ministerial positions, because it's not like he had a distinct list going into this of who he'd like to appoint into certain positions.
I think we must also look at the kind of ideologies that certain ministers have forwarded. So, you know, people have been saying that the finance minister, for instance, has more of an NDZ kind of look and feel, should I say.
Right.
But so I think that would be one of the ministries that we really should look out for. There might be a big change there, because Cyril, just yesterday, it was announced that he's actually heading the delegation from South Africa to the IMF. And that is a very big thing, because the last time we went overseas, what happened? A minister was called back and basically fired.
Praveen.
So he needs to go and fix all these issues, plug all the holes, make sure everything's
patched
up.
You know who was so quiet during this whole elective process at the ANC's elective conference at NASREC, and for a month or two before that and for a month since then, is Malusi Gigaba, our finance minister. Dead quiet. Do you think he's biding his time, trying to find a way to make himself relevant to the incoming possibilities, or do you think that he's doing what's right for the economy and keeping quiet, because that's also necessary?
Yeah, look, he is the Minister of Finance, so he needs to be quiet for a bit. He's not really, it doesn't have much opportunity to really speak out. But at the end of the day, he has never really been a very outspoken person. He's kind of behind the scenes, and this is now post ANC Youth League. But as a finance minister, yeah, he kind of needs to just bide his time and then wait until he gets told. And the ANC has a culture of this. Remember, people don't speak until people tell them to speak. One of the biggest problems in the ANC is that Zuma just goes and says things without speaking to anybody else. So this is a huge culture thing where people don't talk out of turn, basically.
All right, I've got to squeeze one more thing in. We're doing the Burning Platform this morning. It's brought to you by Nando's. Deshni Subramani's here, and she's sharing some of her insights into what's been going on over the last couple of days. So if you have some thoughts on that, you can always get hold of us on 0797482090 on the WhatsApp, or you can call us on 0861555189. I'm curious about what's going on with Patricia de Lille. She's come out guns blazing. The DA leadership, have they got their heads up their backsides? Because it seems to me that what this is a very much coordinated takedown of Patricia de Lille. There's this manufactured story. She says she's going to sue the pants off the people who started it, because there's no substance to it at all. She's come out with some fighting words this week. I can't help but side with her. I can't help but think, what are Musi Maimane and Van Damme, what's her name?
Phumzile
Van Damme, and all of those other people in the DAs, what do they call it, Federal Council.
Which is essentially its NEC.
Why doesn't one of them stand up for her or say to whoever it is that's going at her, listen, back the hell down, she's got a job to do as mayor, these are unsubstantiated charges, why have we suspended her in the first place, or are they in on it?
So, okay, this is party politics. With the ANC, just to make a comparison quickly, we have a lot more access to them because we historically have. There's always been more to understand in the ruling party than there has been with opposition politics. Mm-hmm. And look, generally, as a media, I don't think that we're very good at opposition politics. We don't really look at the opposition parties the way we do with the ruling party. So that's really a setback from our side, where we're kind of seeing these things as if it came out of nowhere. But actually, these things have been brewing for a while. Also included in that is, remember, this has been going for a long time. Remember when Patricia de Lille quit to be more mayor than she's ever been? yeah, she was like, you know, quitting all party stuff. And she's like, nope, this is my job. So you could see from then that there's been an issue. There's been problems. Things are happening that we don't know about. And right now, within that party, I think they are too busy focusing out, like, what is the word when? Oh my God!
Go on.
Beanie is like my words are gone.
Go on.
You've done
fine so far.
Okay. So far, where, you know, in public, they really have a lot of the national politic to worry about right now. Mm. They're really trying to push themselves and establish themselves, or not establish themselves because they have been established, but they really have to push themselves as an opposition party to follow, because so far the EFF has kind of been the leader in terms of what an impeachment is. I mean, it's the EFF who said, look, we need to get former jurors to help us with this draft regulations. We need to do this. We need to do that. The IFP has been in the middle of it. So the DA really has a lot of national politics to focus on. There's not that much room to discuss internal politics, and do we even know much about the internal politics? Does the DA also not have a culture of not speaking about internal things? When Zilla was fired, how much did we know about that? Not really that much. We kind of had to speculate. Is there a problem? Isn't there a problem? With the whole black caucus of the DA, in inverted commas, did we know what's actually going on, and do we even know now what's happening with them? We don't.
So, but, I mean, when you're busy trying to clean up your house, do you want to show everybody the dirt that's coming out?
Exactly.
But Patricia DeLille seems like the wrong person to gun for if you're trying to show that you're cleaning house or you're trying to... Because she has a lot of people's support. She hasn't done a bad job as mayor.
Mm.
She's very honest. She's very forthright. Her political history is one of someone who is interested in helping the poor, and she's keen to get things going. She's a worker. She gets stuck in. It does seem to me like it was a miscalculation by whoever decided she's the one we're going to go for here to show that we're, I don't know, cleaning house, as Mubs put it.
Mm. I mean, I don't even think they intended to show it that way. I think, I don't think that they know that there's very little eyes, very few eyes on them right now.
Yeah.
And I think that they didn't intend to make it seem as if they're cleaning house. But what I do agree with you on is, was that the right person to target in the first place? I don't really know, to be honest, enough. I'm one of the people responsible for not knowing enough about opposition politics.
Yeah.
But I don't know enough about the internal dynamics of the DA to be able to understand why that was the person. But in Cape Town, we've got a series of issues. There's a whole lot of problems. We've got gang violence.
Right.
We have got water issues of that, and the water issues seem to be historical. I don't want to blame it on her, but and also the gang issues. But we've got things that haven't been tackled properly. We've got things where we decide that soldiers is the way to respond, you know, gang, which is ridiculous.
And even this water crisis, like, you're going into people's private property and, like, shutting down their water. It's very draconian.
Look, it's a little bit ridiculous, but they also really need to understand this is urgent. This is not tomorrow or just now or now. This is now, like now. Like the South African now?
Like the South African now.
And do you really want, if you're in a crisis situation like Cape Town, do you really want your mayor distracted with crap over her renovation of her house for like a couple of $100,000, which we obviously in this country are very sensitive and primed for because of Nkandla and everything else. But she's been giving journalists access. She said, go, look around. Tell me where this money is. She's shown them her statements. She said, this is what I've paid for. It would seem to me that the burden of proof on this whole allegation about Patricia DeLille is on the other members of the DA who've put her in the position where she has to defend herself.
I mean, that is the position of the country too, and it seems like if she's not been given that opportunity, then we really need to ask the DA, are they acting constitutionally?
Sorry, how are Bowman Gilfillan roped into this story?
So they're the company that's been contracted. Let me just show you.
They've been contracted to investigate it? They're a law firm.
No.
Yeah, Bowman Gilfillan are lawyers, so are they coming in on behalf of the DA or on behalf of Patricia DeLille?
They're coming in on behalf of the DA.
The DA.
I think
it is. Okay.
Yeah.
Wow.
So, because, I mean...
So they're lawyering up against Patricia.
They are. And so if they're lawyering up against their own DA person...
What a mess.
You really need to wonder about...
You would think, at this point, that... Just strategically, someone in the DA would be saying, guys, why are we fighting this internal battle when we've got an election next year? The ANC is broken up, and in no way can they confirm that they're unified, no matter how much Baleka screams about it, or Ace. This is an opportunity that we've got to reach for.
The thing is, why is a legal body, a legal company, asking or telling a DA member that...
The panel can't talk.
Exactly. And what they're actually facing. This should be an internal issue. This should not be a legal issue. This is already a legal problem.
Jeez.
So basically, they're really escalating and ramping up to try and intimidate her and make her seem as if, you know,
Well, just to add on to the point that you were making about how they don't like talking about their issues, the chairperson, James Self, has recently called on members within the party to refrain from public commentary.
Yeah,
because he says that they're going to deal with it internally this coming weekend.
That's hypocrisy, because whenever the ANC does that and they have closed meetings where they don't allow the press in, then the DA goes off their rocker and they say, oh, you see, the ANC with their old secret liberation movement tactics.
And they too have things where, you know, the media is not allowed to go in. It's just the way it works. These are internal issues. It's a whole political party. We can't expect that they're going to reveal everything and we must know everything. That's not the way it works. But yes, I mean, look, at the end of the day, the secrecy around it is kind of, especially given the fact that Patricia Digital has shown her statements. She has said she's done very well. This is what she's done. She's paid for this. There's no issue here. This is the problem. This is the problem.
Well, Deshni, somehow we've run out of time, and it's feels like we only just started talking to you 5 minutes ago. Thank you so much for coming to see us this
morning.
You're
welcome.
And your insights have been very, very helpful, particularly the options available for getting rid of a president, which you outlined very nicely for us. So thank you for that.
Sure.
And we will check in with you again soon. Don't be a stranger.
Definitely.
Thank you. Deshni Subramani and the burning platform for this morning, which is a little bit of political insight for the week ahead, brought to you by Nando's. And for those people who are obsessing over where Justice Malala is, I spoke to him yesterday. I sent him a little update I had from one of my birdies in the ANC.
Oh.
And he replied, he said, oh, this mess that is the ANC, it just gets worse and worse and worse. In fact, his exact words, let me read them to you because it's kind of funny. He goes, it doesn't stop, does it?
Yeah.
Nope.
So he'll be with us next Thursday. Deshni, thank you so much for coming in to talk to us today. It is 20 minutes to 8 on a Thursday morning, cliffcentral.com. How do you like those lyrics, Ben? It feels great, motherfucker, yeah. Huh?
Yeah, nice, nice. Good tone as well.
Huh? Mubs, do you like those lyrics? Feels great, motherfucker, yeah.
Oh, see, I wasn't paying attention to the lyrics.
Let me just go back and let you just hear that again.
Oh.
Listen. Feels great, motherfucker, yeah. Yeah. Nice, right?
Who is this gentleman?
Cheat Codes feels great with Fetty Wap and CVBZ.
Okay.
You like?
Feels great.
Motherfucker, yeah. It's nice. I mean, that's how a lot of people, sometimes you just don't have better words when you're in a really great mood and everything's going well. It feels great, motherfucker, yeah.
This is true.
I think we should be saying that more often. You know, give us less reason to be angry and grumpy and miserable with each other.
It's cathartic.
Yes. All right. There's lots to talk about this morning. I got a message from Run at CryptoManRun on Twitter. He said there's some news out of South Korea this morning when it comes to cryptocurrency. So we're going to check in with him briefly. But Mavs, you've obviously got a full plate of stuff to discuss with us that we didn't even get to with Deshni.
Oh, okay. Well, can we talk a little bit of Apple news? Because they have also been in the headlines over the last couple of days.
Yes.
You remember they were made to account for the fact that they have been slowing down their older devices due to the older weakened batteries not being able to cope with the phone's workload, right? You remember that story. It first came out in December.
I heard they did that on purpose.
Yes, they admitted to doing that.
People
they,
were pissed off.
Yeah, Apple said that it had to slow down the phone's processing power to keep the older phones from freezing. Now, that wasn't a good enough explanation for French authorities because Apple Inc. are now facing a French criminal probe into these allegations from consumer groups. The investigation was confirmed by Paris prosecutors earlier this week. And essentially, Paris or authorities in Paris have now opened a preliminary investigation. This happened on the 5th of January that the investigation was opened. Part of the things that they're going after Apple for is they're being accused of deceit. And then back here at home, following this announcement, South Africa's iStore announced yesterday that they are now going to be happily replacing batteries, your battery, at the iStore for a reduced cost.
Good.
So if you are an owner of the iPhone SE 6, 6 Plus, 6S, 6S Plus, 7 and the 7 Plus, and you suspect that your phone has suddenly slowed down. The iStore are saying that you can happily go in and have your battery replaced at a cost of just under 400 rand. So this,
which is, by the way, a lot cheaper than you'll buy a brand new one for.
It's a lot cheaper than what they could have charged you for. Cause,
well, I'm glad that at least someone is making an effort to do the right thing consumer-wise, because this is very bad for Apple.
Mm, right? It's not a good look for them at the moment.
Right. And the more customers you have, and the bigger a business you are, the more responsible you have to be about not misleading those people and lying to them and making things happen that are detrimental to their use of your product. Dummies. They should have woken up to this a lot sooner. I can't believe that they allowed this to happen.
I think with a brand like theirs, more than anything, it's more a reputational thing.
Yeah.
Because, you know, everybody considers their
brand.
You're
not going to get away with, right.
Elite plush brand, and really you don't want to start backsliding right now, but they're being accused of all sorts of things, and now French authorities are saying that nope, we're going to go after them. There's a criminal probe that's now been launched.
I want to talk to Run Noiner. He's on the line now. We're talking Crypto Man Run. He's at Crypto Man Run on Twitter. He says there's some news on crypto, and since we've been talking so much about this in the last few weeks, he's the man to tell us about it. South Korea, what's happening, dude?
Morning, Gareth.
Morning, man.
We woke up this morning with the crypto prices down. Bitcoin was down to about $12,800 from where it started trading last night at about $14,500.
Yeah.
Next step, we open up Twitter, and we see a whole lot of news articles saying that South Korea, who is one of the biggest, if not the biggest, crypto trading community in the world, is planning to ban crypto.
What?
Now, we have this thing on Twitter, on crypto Twitter, which we call FUD. FUD is what we refer to as fear, uncertainty, and doubt.
Mm-hmm.
And a little bit more investigation, I got onto the phone to some journalists that I work with in Korea, and they said that there's absolutely not a ban on the cards. All that happened was that the authorities raided the exchanges to make sure that the exchanges' records were up to date and wow, that there was no possibility of tax evasion. Furthermore, what I found out was that the raid was conducted by the tax authority, and the tax authority certainly has no jurisdiction to ban cryptocurrencies or to ban cryptocurrency trading. So it means that all this news that has come out from Korea and that has driven the market down from where it was before seems to be a whole lot of fake news or inflated news, as you want to call it.
Now, does that mean that there's a buying opportunity if you are a trader?
My thesis, as I posted on Twitter as soon as I woke up this morning at about 6 o'clock this morning, if you think about what happened, obviously Korea and China and all of them were awake before us, but they saw this news and they traded the market down. Europe's going to wake up and look at this and go, oh my God, there's a ban in China, a ban in Korea. And then as soon as the information surfaces that this ban is, well, there's no ban on the card, and that all this is just that the tax authorities raiding a few of the exchanges to make sure that they're actually complying, the prices, in my opinion, should go up. So I'm sitting here with my finger on the buy button. I'm looking for the panic sell when the Europeans wake up and get the shock of their eyes.
Mm-hmm.
And then I'm going to hit the buy button like crazy and pick up all the tokens that I haven't been able to pick up at the 25% of specials.
Like what? Which tokens are we talking about?
So I looked at the market this morning, and a few of my favorite tokens are trading down, particularly a token called Cardano, or ADA. That token was at about $1.20. This morning, I think I saw it at around 60 cents. That seems like a great buying opportunity at the moment. Even Bitcoin, for the more stable investors, you know, when Bitcoin comes down to $12,000, maybe even $11,500, I don't know if it's going to get all the way there. For the guys, for the newbies that are just getting in, that's probably a good entry point to get in. So there are a whole lot of these token buying opportunities that this represents. And I think now may be a good time to start slowly buying. When I say slowly buying, what I mean is if you are planning to buy for 10,000 rand, perhaps start deploying 1,000 rand now.
Mm.
And if it goes down a bit more, deploy another 1,000 rand. And if it goes down a bit more, deploy another 1,000 rand. Because I think in my many years of trading, that you're never going to be the one to catch the bottom of the cycle.
No.
I just want to add one more thing about the whole Korea story. My journalist over there this morning mentioned to me that there's an interdepartmental, interministerial committee or task team that has been set up to regulate cryptocurrency. Now, logically, if you're going to put together people from the tax authorities and their version of the Reserve Bank or the Central Bank and their version of many other ministries to regulate cryptocurrency in a country that has a booming fintech sector. I don't think that you'd wake up one morning and say, all right, we're banning cryptocurrency. Another point is that people mistake South Korea to be like North Korea or to be like China. Now, South Korea is a very different place from North Korea. It's not that kind of dictatorship. Mm. It's not like a Chinese dictatorship. It's a place that's open for business. It has a lot of expats, and it has a booming fintech community. So, in my opinion, and the research that I've done, this is just an unnecessary fight, fear, uncertainty, and doubt, and could perhaps represent a buying opportunity. Wow. Don't buy all at once, because you never know when that panic sell is going to start. But if you've been looking for an entry point into crypto, now's probably a good time to start nibbling your way in.
I love it. Thanks, Ron.
Cool, guys.
Cool, man. Lovely to have the update. There's Ron, and some thoughts on what you should be doing since the South Koreans have been talking about banning. I mean, they can't. It's not an official statement. This is no truth to it, according to Ron. They're just doing what they have to raid the exchanges and find out whether they're keeping good records and that no one's avoiding tax, which I suppose is the most a government can do when it comes to this stuff. Could be a buying opportunity, like he says. But let me be clear, we don't, and neither does Ron, we don't give financial advice. This is like someone saying to you, you know, my lucky number's 32 at the casino. You go and put money on there. It's your responsibility. We can't be responsible for that stuff. We're not financial services board approved or any of that stuff. Not that you have to be. Anyone on earth can go and invest in these things. If you feel that it's an opportunity, go for it. If you feel that it isn't, stay out.
Winners know when to quit. Cryptocurrencies must be all over 18.
What do you mean?
Well, that's all the disclaimers that people...
You mean age. Sorry, I'm thinking 18,000. Wow, Ben, that's very profound. But no, clearly not. All right, there's some other news. There's some other stuff we need to talk about. As I mentioned, our big interview with Vusi Tembekwayo after 8 o'clock this morning. Very excited about that. And keen to hear what you think about it, too. Some amazing ground covered and traversed during the conversation with Vusi. We recorded it 2 days ago. So it's fresh, out of the oven, just for you. In the meantime, other news?
Well, yes.
You go ahead.
So much excitement.
You want a Game of Thrones story?
Sure. Yeah.
There was an auction bid like happening this last week where you could watch an episode of Game of Thrones with Emilia Clarke.
Oh, the Khaleesi?
Yeah, you could watch an episode with her. And Brad Pitt was so keen to do this. So Kit Harington was getting shit-faced at the same event. He went off to the box for a bit. And the betting started like 20,000. Eventually, it just got up to 90,000 quick sticks. So Kit came out hammered. And he's like, oh, I'll sit in as well. So basically, the prize or the item was Game of Thrones to the Khaleesi, and then it became with Jon Snow as well.
Okay.
So Brad Pitt's like, I'm in. And he made a bid for $120,000.
And he won.
To watch an episode with these two.
See, celebrities also have their fan moments, right?
Yeah.
He was then pipped to the post by someone else who put down $160,000 to watch an episode with these two.
Probably some Silicon Valley billionaire geek.
Well, Angelina probably saw what was going on. It's like, what the hell are you doing?
Yeah, Angelina put in a phone bid.
I'll take all 73 of those kids away if you put any more money to go watch that episode. Okay, Angelina.
But I didn't know Brad Pitt was such a Game of Thrones fan.
Yeah, huge. Oh.
But are you watching it with the Khaleesi or with Emilia Clarke?
Well, that's what I was going to ask. Because are they going to dress up?
Yeah.
No, they won't dress up.
It'd be pretty cool if they did.
She seems like
be
so much
weird
fun.
If they did.
I saw a whole lot of pictures of her at some awards show. Could have been the Golden Globes. She looks like she's smiling and laughing in every picture.
Yeah, watch her on the Graham Norton show. Like, she just seems so great.
Yeah, Khaleesi.
And then Kit Harington, Jon Snow got absolutely even more.
So he was shit faced.
And that very night was then forcefully removed from a bar.
Oh, amazing.
There's like clips of him playing pool. He's a mess.
I like that. I think
what a night out.
That's great too. Real people. First of all, it makes me feel like, you know, when you have a celebrity that you either have a crush on or that you like or that you love the show of, or you're a big fan of a TV show, for heaven's sake. Brad Pitt's like that too. This guy's been in movies, but he's a big fan of Game of Thrones. He's willing to spend $120,000 of his own money to be able to sit with the Khaleesi. Imagine how that feeds her ego. She's like, wow, this guy used to be like the hottest man in the world, and he's still up, right up there.
Yeah, but you know,
a movie star, and he wants to sit next to two TV stars.
So it'd be really shitty if you go, oh, cool, Brad Pitt paid this money to come watch the movie. Oh, wait, there's 17 kids with him.
By the way, about a week ago, HBO confirmed that they're only going to air it in 2019.
Yeah, same as Rick and Morty.
They're going to make you wait the whole of 2018, Gareth.
Yeah. No, there's some tough they're playing with ahead. You.
I'm going to look as old as that old woman, the red woman, when she looks at herself in the mirror.
Yes.
That's how old I'm going to be when I eventually get to finish Game of Thrones.
Yeah, shit.
Oh, that's too long. I'm obviously going to come back in 2019, but I'm pissed off. It's too long. What have we got this year to look forward to?
Well,
season-wise?
Black Mirror.
You are so into this Black Mirror. Everyone's talking about it.
Well, you've got to watch it. You just got to watch it.
Yesterday, someone said to me, oh my God, Black Mirror. It's the talk of the town. Someone else said to me, here, you have to watch, Ben, you have to watch episode 5 and 6 of Black Mirror. It gets better and better.
Yeah, I think of an episode. The last episode I watched when the dogs kind of attacked that woman. But they're not dogs, yeah.
Jonathan Witt, who is on the Renegade Report, and I've got to recommend again that you listen to the debate between Prof. Benatar and Prof. Peterson about antinatalism. You've got to hear that last episode. It's stonking. He says, Prof. Jonathan Witt. Prof. Jonathan Witt. Dr. Jonathan Witt says, a friend of his has been trying to get into medicine for 15 years. He easily applied more than 30 times to all the different universities. In the meantime, he built his CV up. This year, he got a spot. Perseverance works. That's a nice story. And, guys, listen to this horror story, says somebody. A group of us all put money together to buy a 1,000-rand voucher for a newly wed friend of ours. I had to contribute 250, which was so difficult because I don't really like the bride. Can you believe I lost the voucher and now I have to replace it?
Wow.
So this gift has cost me 1,250 South African rands. I'm disgusted in my behavior and I don't like the bride.
Oh. Wow.
You don't like the bride even more now.
Yeah, shame. What a conundrum.
She is horrible.
Then someone wanted to know what that amazing song was that we played at 7 o'clock.
I got a money. Yeah,
that's the one.
Something Soweto.
All right, you got it.
Something Soweto. Just
yeah.
Google him.
Just look. Yeah, look that up. Streaming at Cliff Central.
It's the anthem for Jan because I got no money means you don't have money.
Yeah, right.
So that's it's the anthem.
Why do you think I played it? Just Milan says I'm streaming CliffCentral.com via TuneIn. The mic quality is fantastic. Oh, that's nice to hear.
Well.
Yeah, Gareth, maybe the whole snoring thing is a spaniel thing. I listened to your show yesterday, and my ginger cocker spaniel, whom I call Satan, sleeps with his eyes open.
Wow.
Yeah, that's creepy.
I went with my sister yesterday. We took all the dogs to the vet at once to get all their inoculations. So we had 4 dogs in the back seat of her car. It was like a hot box dog breath. Oh my God.
Did any of them fart?
No.
Oh,
they,
okay.
They
all get along?
Yeah, they all get along. Okay. They all went for their injections. All 4 of these goddamn dogs we had to take into the vet.
I can only imagine the scene. I'm trying to wrangling all of
them. Yeah, they all had leashes on. It was crazy. It just looked like a joke. A couple of other messages. Someone sent me a voice clip. I can't play these sometimes off of WhatsApp because they're on a different machine to the one that we use for audio. Apparently, here's an interesting story. Mm-hmm. The discussion earlier about rich people and how much they do or don't spend, and we were talking about Warren Buffett. Mm-hmm. His kids are not going to inherit a thing.
Yeah, they're actually...
He's not giving them a cent. This guy does not like to spend. He does not like to give. I mean, no, that's not fair. He's a philanthropist, a massive philanthropist. Either him or Bill Gates is the biggest philanthropist of all time in terms of giving their money to charities and trying to make
combined,
the world a better place.
Yeah. They work together in doing that. And
but
so
his kids aren't getting anything?
His kids each have a charity of their own, and they were each designated some of their father's fortune. And knowing that, okay, cool, I'm just going to gladly give someone $300 million, but I'm not going to get it at all. Like, I'm getting
nothing. Oh, so
nothing.
He's given them the money to give away.
Yes.
I love that, though. Isn't there something beautiful about that? Because as much as I like the tradition of kind of you know, dynastic wealth and family wealth. When you read about it in history, that the second and third generations usually just are terrible people who piss away the money anyway. Not always, but sometimes.
Wait a minute. So they have to give it away, or there's an option to keep that money?
No, there's no option to keep it.
They have to give it away.
You know what? Ooh, this is a big test. No. Because you know how human beings are, and we see it every time somebody with money dies. It doesn't matter if you're a celebrity like Prince or Michael Jackson, or whether you're a nobody and you come from, you know, an impoverished background. After somebody has died, the remaining members of the family start squabbling over your belongings.
Well, I just watched it.
Like, it happens across the board with the rich, with the elite, with celebrities, with the
like Tyka Nelson
poorest of the poor. So I wonder how these kids are going to feel about that.
Well, I just remember watching this in a Warren Buffett special. And he did this a few years ago. It was a full-on press conference. Mm. The kids stood up. Bill and Melinda Gates stood up as well in declaring that
they're also not giving their kids
fortune.
A whole lot of money. You know, I think...
It's interesting.
I think because these people are self-made millionaires and they're not...
Billionaires.
Because they're not people who inherited money, right? I mean, Warren Buffett and Bill Gates, these are ordinary middle-class people. They had the basics.
Mm-hmm.
Their parents were good people, obviously tried to raise them as well as they could, but they didn't have a lot of money. It's not like royal families who pass on, you know, huge amounts of generational wealth. Maybe their view of this is that if they spoil their kids and they give them money that they earned, not their kids earned, those kids are going to be a screw-up. Because they'll never learn how to make a difference in the world or to do something for themselves.
But Dad, can't you just get me a villa?
Well, while he's alive, I'm sure he's not, you know, he'll buy them nice presents and he'll like go on family holidays and stuff. But I don't know that I hate this. I think this might be a nice idea. I think this says something about the character of those people. Maybe there isn't any merit to handing over wealth, automatic wealth, to your children.
Sure, I mean, just ask Paris Hilton and her idiot brother.
That idiot brother is one of the worst examples of exactly what I'm talking about. Remember, he's the one who had that temper tantrum on a plane.
Mm.
He's verbally abusive. He gets into fights the whole time. He's an entitled little shit.
Mm.
You know? That's exactly what I'm talking about. All right, we got to get to Vusi Tembekwayo. So let's wrap this up. Here's the un-news for you this morning. Everything you need to know in one convenient bite-sized chunk. Harvey Weinstein is back in the news. He was allegedly attacked by an unnamed man at a restaurant this week. When asked why he attacked Weinstein, the man said he was a struggling actor trying to break into the industry and even took massage classes to help, but Weinstein just never gave him the time of day in the last 10 years. Apple are hard at work to make their phones less addictive to children. After weeks of brainstorming, it was decided that they will call on the help of U2 to make this possible. Kids really don't care about Bono or his friends, even less about their music, so putting their new album onto all iPhones with the next software update, kids will be forced to go back to reading books and playing outside. Floyd Mayweather and Conor McGregor are feuding again on social media. After they both became hugely rich in that overhyped boxing match last year, the world thought things would end there. Oh no, the tension's back, with speculation doing the rounds that the two are set to star in an urban remake of Brokeback Mountain, set to be released just before Christmas. Isn't that exciting? Vusi Tembekwayo, coming up next, right here, on CliffCentral.com.
This is CliffCentral.com.